Welcome to the Voice Hacks Podcast. I'm your host, Mary Z. On the Voice Hacks Podcast, I'll be talking to some of rock and metal's best singers, coaches, and experts about what goes into the mysterious and amazing sounds we make with our voices. If you like this podcast, please help spread the word by sharing it with your friends. Post our episodes on your Facebook and Instagram and tag me and my guests. I'm at Metal Mary Z on Instagram. Don't forget to leave the show a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And of course, follow me on YouTube at Voice Hacks by Mary Z. Let's get into it. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Voice Hacks Podcast. I am very excited about my guest today. I have wanted to interview him for a long time. And today's guest is Enrico Di Lorenzo. And he's the vocalist of Hideous Divinity, who some of you might know, especially because they have an upcoming North American tour on the books. And also, but the most fascinating thing, the thing I'm most excited about as a vocal nerd, is he is a medical doctor and an audiology and phonology expert, right? I believe that I've read that you refer to yourself as a phonologist. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Phonologies, phoniatrics, phoniatrician. I never know how to call me since we have this field in Europe. When I'm in US, usually they refer to me as a laryngologist, but it's not quite the same because I am a doctor, a medicine doctor, specialized in human voice and human communication.
Phonologist also implies the study of vocal phonations. How are we producing the sounds that we're producing? And I've read that you've studied quite a bit on exactly that, how we are producing the sounds that we're making, particularly in extreme vocals. And what's cool for the audience, they might not know, but I love your Instagram. I love that as a doctor, you literally can just take your endoscope and make an Instagram video of yourself phonating extreme vocals. What kind of vocals do you do as a vocalist? How would you classify the sounds that you make with your band?
So with Hideous Divinity, I am an extreme singer. So what I do is essentially growling and screaming. I've never been one of those who invents new names for what's already out there. I started singing in a black metal band when I was 16, and it was screaming and growling. I am still talking about screaming and growling. I do not see the necessity of invent new names, new classification. I always receive these mails from people asking me, can you do grunting, guttural, fry scream, false call scream? Okay, guys, enjoy yourself. Sing, growl, scream. That's the point.
Yes, the art of it.
Being a doctor myself, I'm used to a sort of laryngeal fetishism. A lot of people is more interesting in the larynx more than the voice. And I do believe that being a doctor working on an artist, I have to be focused on art. So, but again,
wow.
To answer... Yeah, if we forget the main point of our activity, we are not serving art. And as a phoniatrician for artists, I have to think about voice. And the voice I'm using when I sing is extreme voice, growl and scream. That's what I'm all focused on.
Mm-hmm. This is really fascinating because a lot of people with your level of knowledge and research and education about the larynx would be in that, you called it laryngeal fetishizing or something like that. That I liked that a lot because I see that a lot in lessons because I don't have the knowledge that you have, but I do try to let people know roughly what movement is happening. And perhaps that explains the reasons why you shouldn't make certain sounds, which would make certain movements, et cetera. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, but then people do start focusing a little bit more on that than the actual art of the phonating. And that's interesting that you want people to focus on their art. That's so important, right? Because people get so absorbed into the technique, I think.
It's good to be focused on technique, to have a lot of your brain focused on technique, but you have always to keep in mind that this is just an instrument to do something different. I'm not saying that a vocal teacher or a vocalist should not know physiology and the physiopathology of human artistic voice. But again, this is just a tool. Knowledge is a tool for instinct to do something more. That's the reason why we're singing. Well, actually, I started as a singer, of course. I was 16 when I started doing growling and screaming. And then I decided to study medicine when I discovered that there was a peculiar field of medicine focusing on voice more than larynx. Of course, I immediately put a probe into my nose to understand what I was doing, because it was 2010 and I still had in my mind the question you have been asked and I've been asked, and every singer and the extreme singers has been asked: how can you do it?
The how.
Does it hurt? How? And then I wanted to know how. That's why I started studying this field from a scientific point of view. But again, if we study it, it's not to turn a tiger into a kitten.
Okay, but, right.
The opposite.
So you did do some clean singing. And do you still do you have a set of warm-ups or singing routine that you do to maintain your instrument? Even though you largely perform harsh vocals, do you do any clean singing or anything like that to warm up or prepare?
No, just for myself. Mm-hmm. I like to sing. I'm not as good as I am in screaming, actually, but I really enjoy it. So I like to sing in my clean voice for myself. I have fun, I record something. And I used to sing in a rock band in Italy, an Italian industrial rock band.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really nice. Yeah. That's actually the first time I put a probe in my nose to do a video clip for one of our songs. It was nice. I do not use clean singing as a warm-up. Oh. Warming up, I use some kind of low-energy supraglottic phonations.
Okay.
And some overtone singing, because more than warming up the larynx, I usually prefer to warm up the brain, so to focus my attention on the management of the overtones and harmonics. That's actually the only tool that we have to do some kind of pitch in our voice. We have no real pitch when we growl and when we scream, but we can move.
Yes.
Just moving, yes, on the overtone. So that's why I prefer to train my inner ear working on overtone and then do some this kind of low level, low energy phonation that is really helpful, because this kind of soft supraglottic phonation makes you produce a lot of good mucus. I kind of have a publication on it. I have a paper on this soft supraglottic.
I read that you've been a part of some awesome studies. One study that I look at all the time, but I didn't know that you were in it.
Oh, yeah. They forgot to mention. Actually, not my colleagues. We always mention each other. But when it passed from specialized publication to mainstream publication, they just put a couple of names and they were,
yes,
so excited to talk about extreme metal by doctors that they forgot that there was an extreme metal singer and doctor.
Yes.
And the lyrics is mine.
That, oh, wow. So it's your lyrics in the videos. Oh, that's so
yes,
great. So this is, I've seen some of the videos from one of the studies you did with Dr. Izdebski.
Izdebski, yes, Christoph.
And
great man.
It's that I was blown away. I was like, oh, he was part of that? I know this study. I actually have seen these videos. I know this well.
That was a funny story because me and Izdebski, we studied growling and screaming with an high-speed camera. That is something that takes 5,000 frames per second. Mm-hmm. So that was the first time actually showing the kind of vibration of the mucosa in the larynx. We found out something very special. What we hear during the growl, this idea or multi-layered sound, is actually what happens in the larynx. We have false vocal folds, arytenoid caps, aryepiglottic folds, true vocal folds, all vibrating together.
Yes.
And the fantastic thing is that every one of these elements vibrates with different sets of sounds at the same time.
Yes.
So we have different structure vibrating together, and each one produced at least two sounds. That's why we have this multi-layered sound. Funny things, nowadays we talk about layers on voice during the recording. We just have a multi-layered sound in the larynx.
We already have a multi-layered sound. Sometimes I feel as though when we are layering harsh vocals, a person who has really good, substantial amount of distortion, like yourself, that's engaging all of these tissues, I feel like when we layer it, it begins to turn to mud. If the person is actually a good harsh vocalist, they are producing a sufficient amount of distortion and they don't need the layers.
I totally agree. And I have nothing against layers, don't get me wrong. I think that once you are in studio, everything is legit.
Yeah, most things that I've been on will probably have some layers of harsh vocals, but a lot of times I try to talk the guy out of it because I feel like I'm making
just
enough distortion
and
that they, like, as you mentioned, we've got, like you said, the vestibular folds, the aryepiglottic folds. I feel like when I'm doing it, I can feel things happening around the soft palate and the uvula as well. Although I know that's not quite as easy to observe.
It is actually the high amount of airflow. We have a very huge airflow during the suraglottic phonation, every kind of suraglottic phonation. So you can feel the movement on the soft palate and uvulas because it's actually blown out. Once I put a camera in the mouth of a girl, making her growling, and you could see the uvula flipping around.
Yes. So by supraglottic phonation, so you're talking about sounds we are making with things above the glottis?
Above the vocal folds.
Yes, okay.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
With the stuff that is above.
There's a lot of stuff above. There is. And I noticed, you know, because in our true folds, we don't really have a tactile sensation, touch sensation. You can't be like, I'm touching my folds, I'm opening my folds, even though we're doing that. Whereas I feel that these supraglottic tissues, I can feel very clearly touch sensation, tactile sensation across them.
Yeah, we have to consider that larynx and everything we use to talk and to sing and to scream as well, in the beginning was developed for swallowing. And the larynx is a system not to suffocate when you swallow. Because through vocal folds, vestibular folds, and epiglottis close the trachea, and then the esophagus opens. So you can push down the food without breathing it. That will lead to death immediately. And then we adapt the larynx for phonation. The magic, the depth on the true vocal folds, making them able to produce one sound, is something really, really, really magical.
Yes, it is.
No other way to tell it. Because we are all fascinated by producing multiple sounds with the larynx, but we always forget that we have an incredible instrument in our throat able to produce one sound. And this is something really rare in nature. We are probably the only one mammals able to do that. When the dog barks, it's not woof, it's woof, woof.
Yes.
The cat is meow. And we can do ah, just one pitch.
Yes.
And it's incredible. But the other thing that characterizes the vocal folds is that we have no sensibility on them. There's no touching sensibility. Otherwise, we will not speak because touching them, one each other, would be some kind of discomfort. So we will not speak. But all the other structure in the larynx are super, super sensible because it's an alarm system.
Yes, yes.
That has to be turned on when food takes the wrong direction. That's why when you begin studying growling and screaming, if you push too hard, you have a terrible discomfort. Okay, it's a good discomfort. You're pushing too hard. But when you can manage the proper techniques, you said it right. You still have a lot of sensibility. You can actually tell
yes.
what's happening in your larynx when you growl, because those structures are more sensible than vocal folds in a different way, of course.
Yes, they are. I call them a bit hypersensitive.
Mm-hmm.
It was blowing my mind because I've said this almost exactly the way you said it to several of my vocal students, because I'm always trying to explain to them, well, it's easy to go hoarse when we speak loudly. There's this music conference I go to in the States every year called NAMM. By the third day of NAMM, usually by the second day, people are coming up to me, Mary, is there anything I can do? And I'm like, unfortunately, it's too late now. You know, just you can stop talking. I can't stop talking. Well, it's just going to get worse, you know, because they're just speaking loudly over the noise of the conference. It's a music conference. So there's people playing instruments everywhere and they try to regulate the decibel volume, but it's never worked. So people are hoarse, but that's, again, the lack of tactile sensation. Because if we could actually feel those slamming together like that, oh my, we would never scream in an emergency. One of the primary needs that we do need to be able to do the bad kind of scream if someone's robbing you or attacking you. The other tissues are quite hypersensitive. So many of my vocal students, the techniques that vibrate the vestibular folds more, they will mm-hmm. start to hold back a little bit at first because it is sort of like your fight or flight being like, you know, the feeling of the sensation of the vestibulars mm-hmm. is so like alarming at first. It's quite safe. It doesn't make people hoarse, but it's really, really alarming. I think most people have a hard time getting used to that.
Of course, we have to tell the good sensation from the bad ones, because if you're feeling pain, if you're feeling the severe discomfort, you're probably pushing too hard. So you are activating pain receptors that are different from the tactile. But if you feel a massage in your larynx, you are working right. I always say the same phrase to everyone. Extreme vocals are like sex. If it hurts, you're doing it wrong.
It's so true, though. It doesn't hurt, but it has a lot of sensation. And that is a little getting used
like
to
sex, once again.
Exactly, right. It doesn't hurt, but it has a lot of sensation. Right. I like that you call it a massage, you know? I thought that was very cool because I hadn't thought of it that way either. And I think that the sort of oscillations of the tissues, that's much more of a way to describe it. In the videos I've seen of you doing it on Instagram, and now that I know that I've seen you in the other videos from the study, it looks like most of the sounds you're making, your true folds are open and they're not really making much contact. They're sitting loose. And is that the primary phonation that you use? Do you ever do a lot of what I I have people doing, or what they want to do, whether I have them doing it or not, is compressed folds phonations. Do you ever make any compressed phonations?
Yeah, the compressed phonation is what, for example, has been called fries cream. Other didactics cultures call this pressed voice. There's a lot of name out there. What I do, a lot of people call it false vocal, false scream.
Yes.
I know what they refer to, but I saw that video. No, it's not that kind of approach. Let's say that we have two main approach for growling and screaming. One based on closing everything and working on turbulence. So it's when we have... Okay,
yes.
That is something that has a lot of pros and a lot of contras. The pros is that you have a lot of duration of your phonation. Mm-hmm. You can do a very long growl. The contras is that it's very quiet. So you're gonna require a microphone in order to have it really powerful. You cannot avoid a certain amount of damage of the vocal folds because your subglottic pressure is very high.
It's very high.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that this is dangerous, but you have to know the limits of the technique you're using. If you're doing this kind of compressed, fry, call it whatever, but if you are pushing the vocal folds all together, of course you're gonna have something very stable, very long in time, but flable and potentially dangerous. The technique that I use the most, because I use both actually, is based on keeping your vocal folds open so that a lot of airflow pass through the through vocal folds, and then you can activate the Bernoulli effect, that is the effect that makes airplanes fly, doors slam, and your vocal folds and the word larynx phonates. So when the airflow passes through the irregularity of our tube, that is our larynx, it started to move and attract all the folds in the larynx, and then we generate the sound. So as you saw in the videos, the vocal folds stays essentially open during this phonation, and the subglottic pressure is very low.
Minimal,
so you have a very powerful sound, but kind of short. With this kind of approach, you can last 7 seconds. Then you have to switch to the compressed one. So once again, I use the technique that was most common during the 90s. We can call it the native growl. But, okay, but there was a lot of exemption. So when you growl in full power, everything open, you can last less, but it's, of course, more powerful. You have to know the limit and the pros and the contras of what you do. For sure, it's less related with damage of the vocal folds, at least of the border of the vocal folds. But it still can lead to severe damage of the vocal folds if you close your larynx while pushing all this air outside. Yeah. If I growl on full power, I have a lot of movement. If I close the vocal folds on this scream, is like a dam is gonna explode. You have to control what you do. There are two different approaches, are both valid. Of course, I prefer mine because
mine.
But once again, you can do whatever you want as long as you understand what you're doing and
the risks associated, right?
Yeah, and you take care of your instrument.
Well, this is exactly how I approach it with the people that I teach. The biggest risk I see with compressed fold screaming, because I was open fold always for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then one day at band practice, even though you can tell my folds are incredibly dense with how low my voice is, but so it's fairly easy to compress them with the type of voice I have, which is not the case with, like, if I have a very high-voiced female client we're looking at really teeny tiny folds. It's really a lot harder to compress them. I feel, you know, sometimes it's just not, it's so much work on the muscles. And the biggest problem I see is, so I'll get clients who have been compressing their folds for years. This has happened to me too as well. They've just been doing it. That was their natural scream. They don't, you can't, as we talked about, you can't feel your folds. So you're not really aware. Are they open? Are they closed? If you just naturally got it. What I see is tension dysphonia a lot. So we'll start to see muscle tension dysphonia from just the repeated, like holding that compressed position long-term with no relief, like with no muscle stretches or anything to relieve that, you know. That's I don't know if you see that, but
a lot of time it's pretty common, actually, especially after repeated gigs like a tour. Sometimes my patients come to my office with some muscular dystonia in the vocal folds, so they talk like this, a really breathy voices, and it's usually more related with the pressed screaming, let's call it this way. But also with the other techniques, a lot of time I can see people with the larynx stuck in the lower position.
Wow.
So they enter my office, doctor, I have a problem. I just finished my tour and then I got this voice and I can't move from that because we have an overcontraction of the depressor of the larynx, the strap muscles. But the next step, if they keep it for too long, is that we have a dystonia of the strap muscles. So the larynx jump up in the upper position. And you can find a lot of time, many singers, after a tour of growling voice, talking like that. And this is really hard to fix. So prevention, as always, is better for everyone, not for me. I earn more money from curing you, from fixing you, than preventing. So I'm talking against my interest.
This is true, though. It's like it's a blessing and a curse. A lot of the people I teach lessons to are very envious of the small percentage of people who can just make some of these sounds without any coaching or whatever. Because there is a small percentage, right? Just like an athlete, there's always people who can just do something, you know? And but at the same time, I always tell them, yes, but then they're not going into it armed with some tools and some preventative things. And if they aren't maintaining this musculature, then that's, again, when they'll go to you and then to me to get exercises and all of that, or a speech language pathologist, because they are going to probably have a lot of problems just from, like, basically doing it unmaintained. It's not the technique itself. It's not like it makes immediate hoarseness. It's like an advanced athlete.
Yeah, yeah. There's a huge difference between playing a gig each month or playing a full month of gigs. It's completely different. A lot of younger singers, I can tell it because I'm old, a lot of young singers or beginners, they every time they sing is a huge rock and roll party. So they sing like hell, maybe wonderfully, but you can tell just by looking at them, they're working too much. Maybe in the right way, but simply too much. And then after the show, they start drinking, smoking, speaking. And by the end of the night, that's something that maybe 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, they just come home. And the next day, they're voiceless. But okay, it's not a problem. I'm going to have a gig in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. But if they are lucky, and if you are really good, maybe they have just, you know, the good occasion, and they start from one gig here and there to a full tour, and then you find some problem. I always struggle with this kind of patients because you can read in their eyes that they're thinking, but maybe I'm not good. And as you said, no, you are a good singer, but there's something that is different from just quality.
Yes.
That is real ability of your instrument. So when you study whatever, when you study guitar, when you study bass, when you study drums, when you study singing, especially when you study your voice, you have to learn how not to gain too much fatigue in your singing. Because once again, this is not an instrument born for singing. It was meant to do something else. We adapted it.
Mm-hmm.
It always works on 100%. So we have more than train your muscles in the larynx. So you have to learn your larynx. You have to start feeling your larynx and learn how to respect its necessities of reparation, restoration, and deflammation. But we could talk for hours on these kind of problems. That's why singers are always the, you know, the not funny ones in the band are the one that just sing and then disappear. I had party with the band. No, not the singer. He was not a fun person. He was trying to recover for the next gig,
yes.
Probably.
Yes.
We call it prima donna in Italy.
Oh,
and it's
course,
something
right?
that is all around the world.
Yes.
The prima donna, the main important female singer of the opera, had to rest her voice. She couldn't party with the rich old man paying for the opera.
But this is what I tell people this all the time, that being the singer is not a lot of fun. You know, the worst risk to your voice is going to be talking over the merch booth at the end of the show.
Exactly.
You know, the loud show is pretty risky because you can never compete with the drum volume. And even though you have the in-ears, you know, you could try to set up a better listening environment, but we know how that goes. It's a loud ass metal show. And the crowd volume too can be really intense. By far, most people, that's when they'll really start going downhill, is the merch booth. I toured one time where my band was opening for Edguy, the power metal, the German power metal band. And Tobias is a very clean singer, you know, and he was really perfect every single night of the tour. But he did not party at all. Like, we never saw him. He was not talking to anybody. And that, I was very young, so I learned really fast, oh, that's what you have to do to be a pro singer every night. Oh, you can't. Oh, you gotta like not party. So yeah, it's very much like that.
And then of course we have the exceptions, like George Fisher, that growls like hell every night, then starts singing with a beautiful, clean voice after the gig, and is always speaking, singing, growling, and his voice is always perfect. So, okay, we have one on a million.
Yes, there's always one guy like that.
There's always one lucky guy, and then we are us humans that we have to...
Yeah.
To manage our numbers, to just compare with them.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's always one exceptional athlete. Everybody else had to go to basketball camp, you know, for that. That's how I view it.
Yes.
I had a choir director in college who, I mean, he had this beautiful baritone voice, you know. He didn't like contraltos. He didn't like people like me in his choir, but it was a degree requirement. So. But the thing is he would be outside the center of the arts smoking Marlboro Reds, the strongest cigarettes you can get. I didn't get it, you know? So I find it kind of random who gets like smoker's edema and who doesn't.
Well, consider that with smoking, because, for example, George Fisher is a not smoker.
He's a non-smoker?
And I do believe that that is one of his keys to stay healthy. With smoking, the problem is that the damage is not linear. It's not linear, but it's exponential. So in the beginning, it may be something that you don't see and you don't hear. But then when the rhincus edema, the smoker edema, kicks in, it's something very fast. you pass from being okay to there's something wrong to, oh my God, what have I done, in a very short, short time. And that's probably the main problem that we have to in avoiding vocal folds damage by cigarettes, because you don't feel it so immediately like other stuff that you can tell, okay, it's doing me wrong. Mm-hmm. With cigarettes and actually also with alcohol, it takes some time to kick in the problem in your larynx. But when they do, we struggle a lot to fix the problems. The most of time we can fix it, but we have to move fast and we have to collaborate with patients. It may sound possible, but I personally saw one person smoking from the tracheostoma. He had no larynx, so he was breathing from the stoma in
the
neck.
Oh my God. He's smoking through the hole. I've seen that before. Yeah.
I saw it too. You know, I can't remember if in South Park or Family Guy, but I really saw it as a doctor.
Wow.
And I said, okay, they think they're making a joke. No, it was true. I saw it. And wow. It's crazy because you can't feel the taste by smoking through your neck. But
that is how addicting it is. If you don't even have a proper larynx already, and you're going to smoke through the tracheal hole.
My God. My God.
That's insane. But for example, you have someone like Miley Cyrus, who was very young, relatively young, mm-hmm. and she couldn't have smoked for that many years, but it didn't take very long, and she got Reinke's edema really fast mm-hmm. as a young person. And then I had my 65-year-old choir director smoking the Marlboro Reds, and I don't know that he had the edema yet. It's so tough. It's so random, and people are affected totally mm-hmm. differently. I mean, obviously, I think it's always bad to smoke cigarettes, but there's always that one guy where you're like, how is he getting away with it? You know, but that is definitely not the guideline or the representation, you know.
Genetics is a bitch, and I call them...
it is.
The steel larynx. We have the steel larynx. People that never studied, smokes like hell, drinks like hell, and they still can sing in a good way. But we can't think about them when we talk about the average number of singers. It's like boys comparing their penis with porn actors. Again, respect your larynx and it will respect you, mm-hmm. probably.
Matt Barlow, the singer from Iced Earth, the former singer of Iced Earth, he did an interview once and he said people were like, why don't you party with us and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, well, would you take your guitar to the bar and pour beer and cigarettes all over it? I like that. I thought that was a really valid point. That's essentially what you're doing with the voice. So you talked about mm-hmm. your basic warm-ups that you'd be doing, but do you rest your speaking voice a lot on tour? Do you do any like physical working out before the tour to prepare your body? Are you going to be doing some things?
I usually spend more time warming up my body more time than my voice.
I see.
I'm not a huge fan of long warm up for the voice. We usually use the reverse relation. If the longer the gig, the shorter the warm-up.
Yes.
Otherwise, the warm-up is itself fatiguing your voice. So I usually do 3 or 5 minutes of vocal warm-up, but a very longer body warm-up with stretching and so on. But most of all, I try to modify my diet when I have a long tour, because when you have a long tour, it's gonna be 3-5 weeks with a very short and intense physical activity, but for the rest of the day probably you're gonna rest, so you have to modify the intake of carbohydrates and proteins and fats, most of all reducing the quantity of carbohydrates that you're gonna eat, otherwise you could be kind of unbalanced and moved on inflammatory system. Of course, nothing too crazy. I just decreased a little the amount of calories, eating less bread and eating more vegetable proteins.
Increasing the amount of proteins and reducing carbs.
But in the morning after the show, usually I rest my voice.
I see.
By doing the most beautiful thing in the world, sleeping. I try to sleep as much as I can in the morning while the bus is traveling, or if we are traveling with an RV, I usually take the driving of the morning.
I woke up, I stay still and silent, and then I start gradually to speak and sing again for the night. That's what I usually do. So I allow my nerves to recover. But what I always suggest to everyone, most of all, is not to test your voice if you think you did something wrong or you did too much. Usually when we are scared, oh my God, have I damaged my vocal cords? And maybe...
Right, testing it out.
Yeah, but it could be the chance to damage your vocal cords.
Ah, mm-hmm.
Because if you feel that you are tired, if you feel that you've done something wrong or too much, first of all, give some rest to the system, because it's a very special guitar that can repair itself. So give it the time to repair, and then the next day, test your voice if you can, of course, but not immediately. Do not challenge you to prove that you're still here. Probably you are here. But testing your voice immediately, if you're lucky, it leads to depression, because you hear that you cannot sing anymore, and then the next day you can sing again. But if you are not lucky, you could damage your vocal cords by testing it in a bad situation. That's the only advice, special advice to the kid. But my routine, as I told you, is physical exercise, reducing calories and carbs, essentially. And, of course, avoiding partying every night and resting my voice. But when I am at the merch stand, and, of course, I am the one that stays more at the merch stand, because you are the singer, you're going to sell more. Mm-hmm. That's true. But we are not on camera, but you can understand if I say,
ah, I see. So you're just sort of like mouthing.
I am Italian. I can sell everything just using my hands. So it's not a problem.
But this is true. You're using a lot of non-verbal expression to
exactly.
communicate rather than yelling over the actual crowd. Because a lot of people don't realize when they're speaking loudly that they are actually slamming the folds
of course.
Because of the lack of touch sensation. So it's very easy to be like, yeah, man, thanks. I really appreciate the show. You know, like it just gets really tough. And then a lot of times, too, we have earplugs in at the merch booth,
mm-hmm.
so we're even more likely to project because we're hearing through
yeah.
that occluded volume, and it's a whole lot. That's smart to be like, just make hand gestures and kind of mouth. What I find that I'll just try to minimize the amount of time, maybe take 30 minutes after the set to rest and then come out to the merch booth and then not stay there and super long, you know. And hopefully when I speak to people, I just try really hard to reduce the volume. And so I will get very close to people, actually, which is hard now that we had the pandemic.
But yeah.
I used to be obsessed with hand sanitizer on tour before that, and because you have to, if you're going to reduce the volume, you're going to lean a lot closer to people, you know, and get in their space a little bit. But
yeah, the pandemic made it even worse, because people cannot read your lips now. Oh, well, because people cannot read your lips. But again, you have to come to Italy, spend some time here talking with your hands, and you will have no problem in selling your merchandise. Trust me.
I love it. I talk with my hands quite a bit, actually. I'm sort of some of my friends in the music industry, they've noticed that, you know, they'll joke with me about that. But I have never been to Italy, so... When we're looking at vocalists that are younger, that maybe are going on their first tour, you already offered one piece of advice, which was kind of to rest a little bit more. Do you have any other, like, two or three most important things that they should focus about if they can't really think about anything else? These are the one or two top things they should focus on.
Less alcohol as possible. Better if nothing. If you have to drink, drink. Few beers, nothing special. Do not get drunk. When you get drunk, you fuck the world system. And then you will need a lot of time to recover the world system. And your body will not concentrate on your larynx to keep it healthy, because it's going to be focused on prepare your liver, as they say is more important. I do not agree, but okay. So drink as less as possible. Smoke as less as possible, and sleep as much as possible. These are the three main advice that I can give. And of course, eat healthy. We are a lot of time, I see people telling me, is this good for my voice? Is this good for my voice? And they show me vitamins, integration, and stuff like this. Yes, they can be good. But we already have it. It's called food, real food.
Yes.
Yeah. Fresh fruit.
Food with nutrition.
Fresh vegetables, a small amount of meat, a good amount of fish, and you're going to get everything you need. You don't need integration. You need not to intoxicate yourself with fake food. It's something that reminds your mouth food, but actually it's not. And it's very fast, the effect on your larynx, the bad ones and the good ones. If you eat good and sleep good, you will gonna hear your voice leveling up almost immediately, because we are always repairing vocal folds. Vocal folds are a system that is always repairing itself. The whole larynx is always repairing itself. So if you give it the instruments and the time to recover, you are going to recover. If you work over its abilities of repair, then you're going to have a problem. And it's not going to be 1 plus 1. It's going to be 1 plus 10 plus 100 plus 1,000. It's going to be a huge problem.
This is great tips of advice, because I think a lot of times people are way overcomplicating it in their mind. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate some simpler tips, especially again with someone as knowledgeable as yourself, because vocalists, of course, are the main overthinking musicians of all musicians.
Yeah.
If there's anyone who can overthink it, it's a vocalist. So
true.
Thank you so much, Enrico, for being on the podcast. I really sincerely appreciate you and sharing your knowledge with us. It's going to be one of my most fascinating episodes. And
thank you.
We'd love to have you back sometime for part two. I'm going to try to come out to that tour and see you guys play when you come here. So,
it will be a pleasure.
That wraps up this episode of the Voice Hacks Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show.